You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Doctoral researcher at the University of Oxford, Paula Larson, has written an article titled "The Inherent Racism of Anti-Vax Movements." Paula is currently researching the history of vaccination, and in this article writes about how vaccinations came to be, where anti-vax movements stemmed from, and what the repercussions of these movements mean for our future health and safety. With the government urging everyone in Aotearoa to get the vaccine, Zazie thought it would be interesting to talk with Paula Larson about anti-vax movements. Yesterday afternoon, they discussed Paula's insights as well as her views on the racism within anti-vax organisations. Zazie began by asking Paula to talk about her research and how she came to write her article.
Yeah, so I'm a researcher at the University of Oxford, just finished my PhD. And I look at the history of vaccination policy and the way in which vaccination policy has been implemented, especially in Canada, the United States, and the UK. And then, of course, that also means I've been looking at the way in which it's been resisted in the past. So my research kind of spans the last 150 years. And one thing I found really troubling, I think, was the inherent racism that happens with anti-vaccination movements in these areas. Now, I do want to start by specifically saying that there's a very big difference between the label an anti-vaccination movement or anti-vax and just vaccine hesitant individuals or someone who's more hesitant to get a vaccine. Those are very separate groups. And when I say anti-vaccination movements are inherently racist, I am looking at not the individuals who are questioning vaccines and have concerns about them themselves for themselves. I'm looking at organized groups, campaigns, protest movements, larger individuals leading those movements that are specifically targeting other groups of individuals and trying to actively discourage vaccination. So that's what I mean by an anti-vaccination group. And those groups have historically existed since we've always had vaccination. So they've been around since vaccines were first introduced, but they've also historically always been generally led by a fairly, you know, educated middle-class white population, originally in England, and then of course across the United States and Canada and other British settler white colonies. And then those individuals have always historically controlled the narrative of what anti-vaccination movement was. And that's kind of where this article was aiming to discuss.
And what effects would it have that these leaders are, like you say, more kind of middle-class white people? What does that mean in terms of which way these movements go?
Yeah, so in the past, one of the things that I point to in the article is the way in which the language was used to discredit vaccinations or to say that vaccinations should not be taking place. And historically, they would utilize very racist language to do that because, contrary, I think, to popular belief, vaccination isn't necessarily the, you know, spontaneous discovery of a man in England, Edward Jenner, who's often referred to as the discoverer of vaccination. He took a practice that was already in place, which was inoculation, which has origins in many non-Western cultures. For instance, in China, it's been practiced probably for over 1,000 years, in South Asia, in the Middle East, in Africa. There was practices of inoculation, which meant to basically take a minor form of a disease, smallpox specifically. So from somebody who had a minor form of smallpox to basically take a piece of the matter from one of their smallpox sores and give it to yourself so that you got the minor form of smallpox and would be protected from the more dangerous forms later. Now, Jenner basically improved this technique and made it more safe utilizing cowpox, which is what we used to call vaccination historically. So the term vaccination, vacca, referring to Latin for cow, vaccination comes from that. So this origin, though, was not Edward Jenner. It was not from a British origin, and the idea of inoculation had been around for a long time and came from non-Western sources. And so some of those early anti-vaccination movements utilized very racist language, quote, saying that it came from African, and I'm quoting the past here, saying it came from African savages, or saying that, kind of like pointing to indigenous cultures' use of inoculation and saying that to practice this type of medical procedure was doing a savage rite of some sort. And so that language itself is inherent in those early discussions of anti-vaccination movements, or at least used by anti-vaccination movements early on as a way of discrediting the procedure itself.
And why is it important to understand the historical link between anti-vax movements and their racist underpinnings?
I think what's really important is recognizing that the ability to turn down a vaccine is a privilege that has not always been given to a lot of populations. And the movements themselves that have come from, well, the movements that kind of developed in the mid-1800s and then resurged many times over the 1900s, they resurged in the context of power relations in societies that valued white supremacy. And that is a key aspect of how, just in general, voices were heard. So there may have been movements, for instance, in America and Canada in the early 1900s against vaccination policy within states and within provinces, that especially when they implemented mandatory vaccination for children within schools. There was quite often resurgences of anti-vaccination movements. For instance, in Toronto in the early 1900s, there was a big movement organized by parents who didn't want to be forced to get their children vaccinated before going to school within a school system in Toronto. And so these individuals complained especially about the mandatory aspect of vaccination, which is one of the reasons you're hearing that quite a bit today too. There's always a resistance movement against mandatory policies like this. But in the context of that case, for instance, in Canada, you have a time when the ability to send your child to school without being vaccinated and then to resist vocally and be covered in newspapers and to have a space to meet, to have your voice heard, is the privilege of a very white middle class community, whereas the Indigenous populations at the time in Canada, First Nations people, were being actively incarcerated within the Indian residential schools that existed, and children were already, you know, subject to whatever medical procedure that the government chose to give them at that time. There was no such thing as a parental consent for an Indigenous person and their children because of the structures that existed within a colonial society. So the ability to say no, to be heard, to have your opinion as a parent even matter, that was a privilege that didn't exist. And what's really concerning about modern anti-vaccination movements is that co-opting of oppression, is that need and tendency lately to point to things like, for instance, the use of the Jewish star, saying that the persecution of having to get a mandatory vaccination is akin to the Holocaust. To take the narrative of suffering and the narrative of oppression that exists within another community and to use it for your own personal benefit and also financial benefit, because a lot of these individuals who are leading anti-vaccination movements are profiting off them significantly through speaker fees, through sponsorships, through tax exemptions if they run the charities that are the not-for-profits that do this. There's a lot of ways that people are benefiting financially off of anti-vaccination movements, and they're using the pain and suffering and the oppression of other people to do it.
And, you know, talking about COVID-19 specifically, in the article you write about how anti-vaccine movements do deliberately target vulnerable populations or racialized people. Can you tell me a bit more about this as well?
Yeah, this is, I think, that was kind of sparked. I was writing this in the context of the release of a kind of a new anti-vaccination documentary series or video series that was released by the Children's Health Defense, which is a known anti-vaccination network, not-for-profit technically, in the United States, which makes millions a year off of its ability to propagate disinformation. It is an industry and it is profiting off of it actively. And they released a video that was actively targeting Black populations and raising fears of, you know, medical experimentation, which is the history of Black populations in America, the history that they uniquely deal with and have to live with and embody every single day because of the structures of American oppression and racism that exist in a society. And that video was released to try and convince more people, Black people specifically, to not get vaccinated, claiming that, of course, this is part of an ongoing trend of vaccination, like experimentation in the United States. And this is a concerning feature because, of course, it's a thing that is generating profit for white individuals who run that organization. And it is using the actual real research of a lot of individuals who have been writing about concerns about, you know, medical oppression in the United States for a long time. For instance, Harriet A. Washington wrote a book called Medical Apartheid. And a lot of the information that she wrote was utilized by these individuals in that movie. But she's the one who raised those original concerns. And her real research is trying to show the way in which medical structures and power structures lead to systemic oppression, but instead is being taken by anti-vaccination movements and used by them to earn money, to spread more disinformation, and to actively harm the communities that they claim that to be, you know, working for, helping in some form. And I say that especially because if you think of the fact that vaccination prevents disease, it is a way in which we strengthen our immune systems and prevent further infection, especially severe infection as COVID in this case, then the more times that disease is not prevented and disease is allowed to spread, the higher burden of disease that exists within a society, and those who suffer most from the higher burden of disease are usually the individuals of color who are in a society facing everyday oppression and live through the harder circumstances that those who have privileged spaces don't have to deal with. For instance, lockdowns, you know, affect a lot of people's jobs. They affected a lot of people's ability to get to work. And also the people who had to still work through the lockdown often were individuals of color working in low-income payments, low-income jobs in frontline, you know, workers in some form, often in grocery stores or in packing plants in the United States, for instance. Those individuals couldn't stay home because they needed the job, first of all, and we needed people to occupy those spaces. And they also experienced a higher burden of disease in consequence of this. So to keep disease high is to create a higher burden of disease on communities of color in a society that are already suffering through a number of other oppressions that affect them uniquely because of the social status of race.
Currently in New Zealand, 73% of people have had their first dose and 38% are fully vaccinated. What would you say to people in New Zealand who may be feeling unsure about vaccines?
Yeah, and I want to say that there's nothing wrong with being hesitant to, you know, immediately jump out and get a vaccine. Of course, ask questions and have a conversation with your healthcare provider about your unique health and your unique situation, because every individual should have the ability to make a decision with consultation of their doctor for themselves, and they should have the ability to have their concerns taken seriously by a healthcare professional, compared to if, you know, talking or looking on Facebook or Googling on the internet or talking to even your friends. You know, your health and your doctor are the two people that know the most about your own unique situation.
That was doctoral researcher at the University of Oxford, Paula Larson, a researcher on the history of vaccination, talking about anti-vax movements and their racist underpinnings relating to the past, present and future.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.